Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a program dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Chris Evans.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a pre-recorded production of Entercom Communications. My name is Chris Evans and this is episode two. I've never done an episode two before, but this is now episode two of the COVID Chronicles. And my guest from last week, Dr. Saria Sicosio, is with me again. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And let's just take a minute. Normally, I would ask, what do you do and who do you do it for? And I do want to do that just to have you reintroduce yourself to the audience. What do you do at Prisma Health?
I'm the ambulatory chief medical officer for Prisma Health. I support our outpatient quality and our health system connecting with our inpatient partners.
So really in charge of kind of a lot of people, I guess, in your capacity there.
We are a large organization and one team.
Fair enough. I'm going to start with some questions that I got from my news department, because I think they're going to be particularly interested in that. And in your capacity as chief medical officer for the ambulatory department, I think you may have some insight into this. Specifically, our news department wanted to know if Prisma is being overwhelmed by the COVID developments that we've seen here in the state of South Carolina. Do you have facilities to take care of all of the cases that you're seeing?
Yes, Chris. Currently, we have enough resources to take care of our community. However, we have a day-by-day plan and touch point with our Incident Command Center to ensure that we continue to replenish those resources. Much like every other health system across the country, we are challenged and concerned about the limited supplies for PPE or patient protective equipment or person protective equipment for everyone who's taking care of patients, as well as the supplies and the mechanics and equipment to take care of our patients.
You're talking about the equipment. The ventilators have been in the news recently. A lot of people will have heard that term and recognize that it's something at least that the people who are on the front lines of this crisis are concerned about. And as it turns out, not everybody who contracts coronavirus, COVID-19, will be hospitalized, and not everybody who is hospitalized is going to need a ventilator. So it's not like everybody who gets corona is going to need a ventilator, but there are some people, and the question is whether there will be too many people for the equipment that's available.
That is correct, Chris, and something we're experiencing from a global impact and
right.
perspective. While not every individual who is infected with COVID-19 will need a ventilator, we know the primary complications we see are lung-related or breathing-related. And for that reason, we are seeing this crunch, and I'm sure you've heard the cases, as I have, in New York, where they are getting
yeah.
very close to not having enough ventilators for all of their patients. We're all challenged with that right now.
But this is also something that Prisma Health in particular has been working on, and you guys have developed a new piece of technology that is expanding the usefulness of ventilators. Talk about that for a minute.
Yes, we have. In fact, through innovation and collaboration with some of our partners, Prisma Health has developed a Y splitter, if you will, through 3D printing technology in partnership with Clemson and University of South Carolina to quadruple the capacity that our ventilators currently can deliver to our patients. So in plain language, what that means is one ventilator can now potentially serve 4 patients at a time.
Is it safe to do that? Is it safe to have more than one patient on a piece of equipment like that?
Well, that's an important question, Chris, and one that we have seen and what we've learned from history. There have been some examples where there's been splitting for 2 people to be on one ventilator. So we have had our pulmonologist weigh in and our critical care specialist to ensure that this is a safe process. And while it's not ideal to have to split one ventilator for 4 people, when it comes down to life and death, Chris, and who receives a ventilator or who may not have access, this is when it becomes critical to the care and the survival.
We were talking a little bit ago about some of the symptoms and things that people experience when they get the coronavirus, this novel coronavirus. What factors make someone more or less likely to catch coronavirus or to survive it once they've got it?
Well, frankly, Chris, what makes people most susceptible to the coronavirus is being exposed to the coronavirus. So I think
okay.
this is a great opportunity to get back to the basics and remind people stay at home. Stay at home if you can help it. Maintain your social distancing. Of course, we have some essential activities we have to follow through with, putting food on our table, so going to the grocery store, washing your hands frequently. Wash before you go into the grocery store. Wash when you're leaving the grocery store. Don't touch your face. And all of these things are really important when we talk about exposure. And if you think you've been at risk, stay home and don't expose yourself to others. So when we discuss what is the risk of dying from COVID-19 or being vulnerable for severe complications, what we're seeing are individuals who have lung conditions, people with chronic disease such as diabetes or other conditions can put patients at risk, those who are immunocompromised. It's really important to keep them protected, as well as individuals over 60.
You mentioned face touching, and that's something that I've heard a little bit about, you know, social media and things like that. Elaborate on that a little bit. What is it about touching your face that's a no-no?
So what's interesting, when we first started to hear more about COVID-19, I was reading materials about touching your face. What I learned is, on average, a human being touches their face at least 3,000 times a day.
Wow.
That's a large number, and probably something we weren't aware of until a few weeks ago. And now that we are, what we recognize is the greatest risk for transmission is through your mouth and through your nose. And if you're touching droplets or exposed to droplets of someone with COVID-19, and then you touch your face and then you touch your nose, all of a sudden you're exposed, and it's much easier to transmit COVID-19 that way.
So that's how the virus is actually getting into your body. It's not just if you got it on your hands, it's getting in through your skin. It's that you got it on your hands and then you touched your face and it got in through your nose or your mouth or your eyes or any of the holes on your head.
Exactly. Through the holes in your head. Correct.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I've also heard a little bit about this week, and I wanted to ask you, because you're the doctor, because it seemed like there was some conflicting information, but there was a suggestion that people with different blood types may be more or less susceptible to catching or having severe ramifications from the coronavirus. Do you have any information on that?
That's a good question, and I've heard different stories, Chris. One is that people with A-type blood are more at risk. I have not seen that validated by any scientific source. So while it may exist, that's not something I've seen be validated at this point.
Okay, fair enough. Well, and blood donation is actually another thing that I wanted to ask you about, because I know in normal circumstances, blood banks are usually desperate for donations. The blood products that they get frequently get used before they expire, and the expiration dates on them are not long. But is it worse now? Are people not donating as much as they used to because of the fears of coronavirus?
That is a challenge that we may experience. However, on the flip side, what we've also seen is people have come together and want to volunteer and do something to protect their communities and protect one another. We can also see that blood drives can get quickly overwhelmed by the number of people in one place at one time.
Yeah.
Blood Connection has done a tremendous job of supplying blood for our health facilities and those in need. My recommendation would be to call Blood Connection, perhaps to schedule an appointment or listen to announcements that they have about what is safe and how many people they need at a time donating blood. But we still need people to donate blood products.
Which, if I remember off the top of my head, because I've interviewed them before, their website is thebloodconnection.org. And you can go on that website and get information about what their operation is during this adjusted coronavirus society. And if nothing else, you can search for the Blood Connection here in the Upstate and find their website that way. Are you aware of whether coronavirus can be transmitted through blood transfusion? Is that something that happens?
Well, I have heard some early stories of people asking for blood types if people have been exposed, that if our blood supply gets so low, they may need blood supply from those who have already been exposed. I don't want to speak to that because I'm not the expert.
Fair enough.
But that's an excellent question for people to ask the Blood Connection about.
Okay. So if you're going to go donate, just ask the phlebotomist or ask the people that are there taking the donation what your concerns are about donating and or the people receiving the blood from your donation. Mm-hmm. One other question that I had is whether you Is there any reason to think that this current pandemic will increase the demand for blood products? Are there any symptoms that would require blood transfusions for people who have coronavirus?
Well, certainly we do continue to experience trauma cases in our hospitals. There continue to be motor vehicle accidents. There are major surgeries that still need to occur because they are critical in nature. So for those reasons, blood transfusions are needed. But we'll just have to continue to watch and see. But we don't typically see, specifically from COVID-19, a direct need for blood products for that disease.
For treatment.
Or that condition.
Gotcha.
Correct.
Going back to the factors that make people more susceptible to coronavirus, I've heard that some behavioral or kind of incidental conditions may increase people's risks, things like smoking or diabetes. Can you run through that category for a minute?
I sure can. And in fact, a lot of the early studies we were seeing and data coming from China was the increase in mortalities and deaths. Now, what we know about the Chinese population is they have a high tobacco use rate, particularly in their male individuals. And we do believe that that may be contributing in nature. As we know, with tobacco use, it directly damages the lungs. So anything that is going to directly impact those vital organs in your body can put you at risk for COVID-19.
Okay. But do they make you more likely to catch it in the first place, or do they just make it worse if you do get it?
I can't speak to that directly, Chris.
Okay.
It's difficult to tell, but we know that people have shown up to be carriers and asymptomatic from COVID-19.
Yeah.
While we have people who are symptomatic, I do believe over time we are going to have a tremendous amount of research to sift through and debrief what worked well, who is at greatest risk, and how can we prepare in the future for the next pandemic.
Well, and that actually brings up another thing that I wanted to ask you about are the symptoms. And we probably should reiterate here, just at the beginning of this topic, what are the symptoms, the primary symptoms? What are the things that people need to look out for in terms of checking to see if they have coronavirus?
The primary symptoms that we still continue to see are fever, cough, and shortness of breath. However, those are not the only symptoms.
Okay.
We're also hearing that there are cases of digestive symptoms, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, something that we have to consider. Now, what the literature I have read states is that primarily those may be symptoms that are occurring with respiratory symptoms, but can still occur alone. Now, here's what's interesting and what is new that's coming out of the information we're hearing, and that is that carriers of COVID-19 possibly have a loss of smell and a loss of taste.
I heard that.
This is something new we're starting to see, yes.
I heard that. That was very interesting to me because that seems like a fever, for example, or a persistent cough are things that would come along with a wide variety of different infectious diseases. But I've never heard of a loss of smell or taste as a symptom of influenza, for example.
That's right. However, at the same time, if we consider that this is a respiratory virus that's transmitted through your respiratory
right.
system, your nose is attached to your respiratory system.
Yes.
So, but it is rather peculiar
right at the top
that
this
of it. Is a very specific diagnosis we're saying, yes.
Okay, so that's interesting. How many of these symptoms do people need to have before they go get checked out? Like, for example, if you've got a fever but you don't have a persistent cough and you don't have trouble breathing, again, lots of infectious diseases cause a fever. Should people be worried that they have coronavirus with just a fever? Should people be worried if they that they have coronavirus if they just have a cough but no fever, no trouble breathing?
Correct. It is a possibility. You'll see some folks with all of the complications or symptoms. You'll have others who have one symptom. Not everybody develops a fever. Not everybody develops a cough. So being aware of those symptoms and remembering if you're beginning to experience these symptoms, virtual visits are available to you to assess whether or not you should be tested for COVID-19.
Walk us through the virtual visit, because this is something we talked about last time, and it's a technology that's been around for a relatively short period of time, but it's really up and coming, especially in this, gosh, I really don't want to call it a crisis because I don't want to stoke that societal
right.
panic and overreaction, but it's a concern. This current concern over coronavirus has resulted in telemedicine becoming much more popular and even critical in terms of maintaining that social distance. When people connect with a doctor through telemedicine, what's that going to go like? Walk us through that visit.
Yeah, I think it's really helpful to walk through. How do you even begin a virtual visit?
There you go.
First of all, we have, through Prisma Health, an app for the public that they can put on their phone. It's called Prisma Go, and this will give the most up-to-date information about the novel coronavirus or COVID-19.
You guys are just inventing all kinds of things. You get the Vesper, you know, you get Prisma Go now. That's fantastic. So it's available on Google Play and the Apple App Store.
That is correct.
Those are the two big ones.
That's right. Whatever phone you have, use your app generating application to identify Prisma Go. And at that point, if you click on it, it will take you directly to online virtual visits, and you can connect with your physician or your primary care provider. If you need care, this is the place to go to get it. Now, as you mentioned, we are developing technology, and we recognize that COVID-19 has transformed the world as we know it for healthcare delivery. Never before have you been able to connect with your doctor as they're sitting perhaps at their kitchen table now, so that we're social distancing ourselves when appropriate. But if you need care, we want to make sure you're getting that care, because if you have diabetes and we don't pay attention to it, it can get out of control and lead to infections or other complications that may lead you to the ED or the emergency room or the hospital. We want to keep you healthy. We want to take care of your blood pressure and all of your conditions to prevent an emergency room visit or a hospitalization.
Because that's all part of flattening the curve.
That is correct. Stay home if at all possible. If you have questions of whether or not you should be seen through a virtual visit or in person at the clinic, just call your provider and they can walk you through that process. They are ready and waiting to see you.
Well, and some has been made about the response to COVID-19 as opposed to the responses that we've had to other even pandemics, normal diseases that have seasonal rises and falls like influenza and even other pandemics in the past, SARS or swine flu, things like that, that we are taking additional steps that we didn't necessarily take before. Why is that, do you think? Is it really that COVID-19 is that different, or is it the fact that it's just on top of the other diseases that are already established?
Well, here's what we're seeing. COVID-19 is not an overnight disease or illness that will go away tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We recognize this will be something that we are managing for months to come, and we'll likely see waves of illness come forward. So for that reason, and what we know about the value and the importance of wellness, is we have to keep people well to begin with. And especially if they have chronic diseases, we have to make sure everything is in check so that you are at your healthiest if indeed you are exposed and contract the virus.
Okay. Another question that my news department wanted me to ask is we've had reports of people who are declining to come to work. It's not that they have contracted the virus and they are, you know, taking the precaution of not going to work and infecting anybody else, but they are afraid that they're going to get it from somebody who may be asymptomatic. Do you have any experience there at Prisma Health of people worrying about actually coming to work even though they're not sick, or even though nobody else at the hospital is sick? No, employees, I should say, not patients.
Yes, we do, in fact. We have sent home team members, if at all possible, to work remotely. Okay. Of course, patient care has to happen, and we are here for our community and taking care of those who need our services. But for all of the support services that we have, there's a tremendous number of team members in our health system that help the front lines be successful and have the resources they need to take care of patients. Many of those people are now working from home. We're trying to be creative of how does that work and how do we connect otherwise to continue to support those front lines to see patients day in and day out around the clock.
It's interesting. I think we may have touched on this last week, but it's interesting with this current circumstance, how many jobs we've discovered could actually be done remotely, you know, that people could stay home and still get their job done. I have discovered working in radio that there are certain things that you can't do from home. If I've got to run a show, I've got to be in the studio to do it. And clearly, if somebody is sick and they need a doctor or a nurse attending to them, that doctor or nurse outside of the realm of telemedicine, if they've got to administer some drugs or take them for a scan or something like that. They've got to be there with that patient. But it's amazing how many people don't actually need to go to work to go to work.
True. That is what we're seeing. And for those individuals who must go to work, by allowing others to work remotely, it has helped us with social distancing, with the sheer volume of individuals and human beings in one space.
Let's talk a little bit. There's a few things that I think bear repeating every single one of these shows. I've been worried about repeating too much information and that people will tune out effectively, either figuratively or literally, because we want you to get the information that you need to survive this. But there are several things that I think do bear repeating. One is where you can find more information. And Prisma Health has a website specifically for that purpose, prismahealth.org/coronavirus. What's the news there? Do you know any of the latest developments that are up on the website there?
Yes, in fact, we have a new announcement, and we have sent this out to our partners.
Okay, I love new announcements.
Critical we want to take care of those individuals that support the critical infrastructure of our cities and our counties. And for that reason, we are offering testing to all first responders that may have been exposed and need to be screened and appropriately tested so we can get them back out to support our communities and fill those needs. That's really important information. We're also hearing that people want to make cloth face masks. Now, as an organization, we are not currently asking our healthcare workers to wear cloth face masks because we do have supplies. Granted, they are limited, but we do have the best supplies at this time for appropriate masks. However, there are people in the community that perhaps are looking for ways to contribute. So I say stay tuned, pay attention to our website, because we're about to post information of where to deliver that type of cloth mask if and when we need to distribute those through the community. Now, for others in the upstate or across South Carolina, if you have supplies available, for example, face shields, N95 masks, PPE gowns, that may be needed, we're also accepting those donations as well. So you can find that information on our website. Those are a couple of the most recent highlights.
Which again is prismahealth.org/coronavirus. Another service that Prisma Health is providing is drive-through testing.
Yes, so we have drive-through testing available to individuals who have been screened either through our virtual visit, as you mentioned, the prismahealth.org/coronavirus site. You can schedule a virtual visit there or on your Prisma Go app. This is a service that's available to anyone who has an order from a physician or a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant so that the tent is available to you 7 days a week. And our hours in the upstate are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. In the Midlands or in the Columbia region, it's 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
And you are also going to be rolling out or recently have rolled out mobile testing as well?
That's right. For our community partners, I think specifically about individuals or housed in our homeless shelters or other community partnerships, we have connected with them and are offering mobile testing. We have a community paramedic and a nurse that are going around to these areas starting today to test those patients who need to be screened and don't have a car, transportation, or way to go through our drive-through testing.
Gotcha. And one last thing that I want to mention just for all of the listeners, if you need other information that may not necessarily be health-related, you can visit our news department's website, 1063WORD.com. There are a number of updates, stories that they're following regarding the extension of school closings, for example, that recently occurred, executive orders from either state or federal governments or local governments. Recently, I heard that Greenville Council had voted to institute a curfew. I believe that happened this week. And so if you live in the city limits of Greenville, you'll want to pay attention to that. And you can find more information about that and other news related items to the COVID pandemic at our website, 1063WORD.com. Dr. Saria Sicosio has been my guest today and will continue to be my guest for the foreseeable future as we continue with the COVID Chronicles and make sure that you have the most up-to-date information regarding coronavirus during this this time of concern. Thank you very much for being here, Doctor.
And thank you. My pleasure.
Well, it's been my pleasure as well. I'm Chris Evans, and this has been Focus on the Upstate.
You've been listening to Focus on the Upstate with Chris Evans. If you would like more information on today's topic, email Chris at cevans@intercom.com.